Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Unfortunately, your flight to Bristol has been delayed once again. But for your entertainment purposes, please listen to the Baggage Claim Monday edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney.
And this is a Baggage Claim edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast. This for Monday, August 2nd, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from a little booth here in the Tampa airport after a Sunday night game between the Red Sox and the Rays. And Taylor, you hear in the background, it is loud here in Tampa.
Oh, yeah, it is. It's hopping on a Monday morning, Buster. I don't know. Is this going to bode well for the podcast?
Well, it bodes well for the podcast because we got a smart guest coming up today, Tim Kirchin. But I think given the background noise, I'm going to call on some relief. So we're going to bring in Tim Kirchin to play point guard for a lot of the podcasts. How does that sound?
That sounds good to me, Buster. You're always thinking ahead. That's what I love about you.
All right, Tim. Welcome. Can you take the baton from here?
Yeah, I'll be the short reliever, using a term from 20 years ago. I'll be the short reliever from here, and let's just get you on a plane and get you safely home. It's very quiet here in my hotel room in Bristol, Connecticut, so I'll handle it from here with a little less noise. Okay, hoping Buster gets on his flight and lands safely at home. Let's look at all the breaking news from the weekend, and there was a lot. Of course, following the greatest trade deadline in the history of trade deadlines, I've never seen anything like that. And even since then, the news is pretty stout, and it's not real encouraging. First up, Tyler Glasnow is expected to undergo Tommy John surgery next week, sources told our Jeff Passan, after attempts to rehabilitate a partially torn ulnar collateral ligament in his elbow and left the 27-year-old still in pain. There still remains a possibility that he can avoid this, but the likelihood is that the ace will miss the rest of the 2021 season and most of 2022, because as we know, Tommy John takes at least a year. So let's review. The Rays lost Charlie Morton to free agency, traded Blake Snell to the Padres, and now have lost Glasnow to an elbow injury. And they're still in first place in the AL East and have the lowest ERA in the American League after sweeping the Red Sox. And more bad news, Fernando Tatis Jr., the spectacular shortstop for the Padres, dislocated his left shoulder for the third time this season. The Padres also placed right-hander Chris Paddock on the IL with an oblique injury. Tatis, the NL starting shortstop in the All-Star game, was injured Friday night while sliding awkwardly into third base in the first inning against the Rockies. He was in pain when he was led off the field by manager Jace Tingler, who opened up the possibility that Tatis might have surgery this year. I mean, there's no doubt when it's the third time, the soreness and the inflammation is going to be greater. Let's just hope for Tatis and everyone else involved in the game that he's going to be okay, but we will see. And finally, the Mets did not sign Kumar Rocker, the number 10 overall pick in the amateur draft. They had an agreement in place to sign for $6 million after he slipped down the draft boards earlier this month, but the deal fell apart after the 21-year-old's physical, with sources saying the concern was over the health of Rocker's arm, not just his shoulder, but his elbow. Multiple sources told ESPN that they don't expect a revised deal to come together before the signing deadline. This is a really tricky spot and really not good for anyone involved. Okay, let's get to the good stuff. Always the games. We had a great Sunday night game at the Trop. Lots of action. Brandon Lau hit a two-run homer for the Rays, and that helped them win the game 3-2.
Swing and drive to right. This one has a chance to the track, to the wall. Gone. Home run. Speaking of puffing out your chest, Lau goes yard. It's a two-run shot, and the Rays are on the board. 2-0 here in the bottom of the third inning.
Ryan Sheriff struck out Alex Verdugo to get the last out of the eighth.
Swing and a miss. Pulled the string on it, and down on strikes is Verdugo to end the Red Sox half of the eighth inning.
And Matt Whistler got J.D. Martinez to end the game.
Swing and a fly ball, lifted into shallow right center. Three converging. Margo's there, and he calls off Lau to make the catch. A winner for the Rays and a sweep for the first place Tampa Bay Rays. Final score, 3-2.
And in the Dodgers-Diamondbacks game, Mookie Betts returned from the injured list. He returned to play second base, his first start at second base ever for the Dodgers. And, of course, he hit a home run.
Mookie hammers this one down the left field line. It is headed for the pole. It hits the pole. Mookie Betts with a home run. His 15th of the year, clangs it right off the left field foul pole. And the Dodgers lead it 13-0.
All right. And the Giants beat the Astros 5-3. Chris Bryant made his Giants debut, playing third base, hitting second in the order, wearing number 23. And he, of course, hit a home run.
0-1 the count. Here's the pitch to Bryant. He blasts one to left field. This one is gone just over the wall. And Chris Bryant has homered in his Giants debut.
The Yankees beat the Marlins 3-1. Anthony Rizzo, RBI single in the eighth inning, tied the score.
Line drive, a base hit to left field, and that'll tie the score. Gardner comes home. It's a 1-1 game. And Rizzo's first weekend as a Yankee continues to glimmer.
And Aaron Judge hit an RBI single to give the Yankees the lead.
And the pitch to Judge is ripped through the left side. It's a base hit. Stanton's going to come home. Here's the throw. It's cut off. The throw to third, they got him. But the go-ahead run scores on the single by Judge, and the Yankees are up 2-1.
The Reds beat the Mets 7-1. Max Schrock playing first base in place of Joey Votto, whose streak of a home run in seven consecutive games ended on Saturday. He got a day off on Sunday, and Max Schrock went 5-for-5 and also hit a home run.
Stroman's pitch, and Schrock sends one deep down the right field line. Well hit, gone! He got it out of here on a line to right field. Max Schrock, with his second home run of the year, gives the Reds a 1-0 lead in the fourth.
All right, Tim, real quick, before we get to Buster, two things I want to mention. Don't forget, you can watch The Last Dance on ESPN Plus, 97-98 Chicago Bulls, Michael Jordan. We don't need to say much more than that. And check out ESPN's newest podcast, Black History Always. Black History Always is the newest podcast for ESPN in partnership with The Undefeated that takes a deep dive into the stories of now and tomorrow from a black aperture that will empower and inspire. Hosted by Clinton Yates. Rate, review, and follow Black History Always wherever you listen to podcasts. Very excited about this show and our friend Clinton.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkson.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirkson, who covers baseball for ESPN. And Tim, thanks for working with me this morning. We have a weird situation. I personally, I'm sure you do too. I love the Tampa airport, but they didn't build this airport, so it facilitates a baseball podcast early on a Monday morning. Tim, what's up with that?
Buster, no airport is built to house a podcast on a Monday morning. It's ridiculous. I am looking at the gate in the background. I'm looking at the terminal in the background. How can you do this every Monday?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I appreciate you. We're going to, I think, pass it off like we're in a relay team, passing the baton back and forth. And so in order to facilitate our sound or to deal with our sound issues, I'm going to be the point guard in this segment with you and then hand it back to you after that. We'll start with this. Obviously, the injuries over the weekend, the injury news, just awful. Fernando Tatis Jr., dislocates his shoulder again. Surgery is, I had doctors and club executives telling me early on, it's inevitable that there's going to have to be surgery at some point. The best case scenario for the Padres at this point is that he can manage it and play, but I think that's far from a guarantee. What do you think?
Yeah, and as you know, Buster, with each one of these, this is now three of them, the inflammation and the swelling gets worse each time. And it's just not as simple as, oh, we just pop the shoulder back in. He'll be completely fine in 10 days. At some point, it's not going to be completely fine, and he's not going to be able to play through it. And it's possible he won't. He's going to have surgery this season, and he's not going to play anymore this season. Now, I don't think that's going to happen, but we have to brace ourselves for the fact that he just can't keep doing this. He's a quick healer. He's an amazing athlete. But at some point, you have to say, all right, that's enough. Let's get this thing fixed for his sake, for the Padres' sake, and for the sake of the game. Let's hope that's not that he doesn't need the surgery during this season. But we better brace ourselves for the fact that there is a possibility that this is it for him this season, and that's a terrible thought.
And I got to tell you, if that happens, it feels like to me that the door would be cracked open a little bit for the other wild card contenders in the National League. I think I've operated under the assumption the last month that the two wild card teams are going to come out of the National League West. I don't look at the Padres as being this team that's in control of that spot right now. What do you think?
Yeah, I've been saying for 2 months, Buster, it's already set. With the two wildcard teams are set. They're coming out of the West. And now I'm not certain about that because, as you know, when you look at the Padres, they have not been a great offensive team this year. They are carried by the shortstop, and you take him out of the lineup every day, and they're not nearly the same offensive team, and they weren't that great even with Tatis in there. Now, you know, they can figure it out at shortstop. Ha-Seong Kim played there yesterday. Jake Cronenworth can play shortstop. Manny Machado can play shortstop. But you're going to weaken yourself at another area if you have to play any of those three guys at shortstop. So it's a tricky spot they're in. And I think you're right. I think the door is now ajar for another team to make a run at a playoff spot that I simply didn't see coming other than those three teams in the West.
So a month ago, I thought for sure Jacob DeGrom was the easy front runner for MVP in the National League. He goes out. He's out until September at the earliest. And again, I, as with Tatis Jr., I'm assuming the worst, so we may not see DeGrom the rest of the season. At that point, I think Tatis Jr. became the front runner to win the MVP. Now he's out. So, Tim, who you got for National League front runner for MVP?
Well, I think you have to throw Ronald Acuna in there also as a candidate for MVP.
Right, who got knocked out, right.
For the season also.
Can I give you a name?
Yes.
How about Trey Turner, okay, who coming into today, according to Fangraphs, he's fifth in the National League in wins above replacement. Max Muncy is fourth. Those two guys now teammates on the Dodgers, but I wonder – because Trey Turner's had such a great year. If he goes to the Dodgers and absolutely kills it, you know how us writers like our narratives? That would be a pretty good one.
Right. And isn't it interesting that Craig Counsell on the who manages the team that's in first place, says the MVP of our team is Willy Adames. And it is clear if you're looking at impact made on a team, he's had the biggest impact of any team in the National League for the since the day he was traded over there. And I'm not suggesting for a second Willy Adames is the MVP of the National League, but what he's done for the Brewers since he showed up has changed everything. So it's, I'm sure there's never been a season where the maybe the top three MVP candidates have suffered injuries of this magnitude and perhaps, you know, not taken them out of it, but really changed the look of the MVP race like it has this year in the National League.
Another big injury over the weekend. Jeff Passan reports Tyler Glasnow now likely to have Tommy John surgery. At the time he got injured, Tim, and some of the Rays say, we all know where this is going eventually. At some point, he's going to need Tommy John surgery. I think their hope had been that maybe he could come back and be a two-inning guy, join that army of relievers they have out there and help him just a little bit. But now it looks like he's going under the knife, which to me, Tim, underscores the greatness of the Rays. Because when you think about it, you know, they made the World Series last year, and the backbone of that team was the three guys in the rotation, Charlie Morton and Blake Snell and Tyler Glasnow. Charlie Morton left as a free agent. Blake Snell was traded to the Padres. Tyler Glasnow is out for the year. And not only are the Rays have the best ERA in the American League, but they're also in first place after destroying the Red Sox over the weekend.
Yeah, they're amazing. And when you look back, granted, 60-game season, the Rays had, 12 different guys get a save last year. They are, they are the most flexible team I've ever seen when it comes to just figuring things out when things go poorly. I mean, look what they did. They took Diego Castillo, who's maybe their best relief pitcher, and just said, all right, we're going to trade you because we have a bunch of other guys here who can save games also and get people out in the ninth. And of course, Drew Rasmussen's one of those. We did his game the other night, and he just comes in from nowhere throwing 100 miles an hour. This is how the Rays operate. This is the ultimate strength of the Rays. Kevin Cash figures it out and they move on. And it's really been impressive what they did over the weekend to the Red Sox, but really what they've done to just to move into first place in this division when a whole lot of, they've got 11 relievers, Buster, on the injured list, 11, and they're still in first place.
Well, I would say this, Tim, after seeing them, you know, survive that game on Sunday night as they finish off that sweep, I do think they're going to need somebody. They're going to need some luck with injuries or, you know, continue to develop some of these relievers because over the weekend they lost Jeffrey Springs, who was really important to that bullpen, to a knee injury. You know, their hope is that he's going to be back in a while, but that was a scary looking knee injury. And I got to say that during that game last night between the Red Sox and Rays, there were about six or seven pitches in the last three innings where you could just see in the faces of the hitter at the plate for the Red Sox, like, oh my God, I just got a hanging breaking ball and I missed it. Just time after time after time. I know Alex Verdugo, Rafael Devers and others just got hangers and they didn't hit it. I do think that that's going to be one spot of this team that's going to be interesting to watch down the stretch.
Well, the Rays always figure it out. I think the bigger question is, are the Red Sox going to be able to figure it out now? Because Buster, as you know, since the trade deadline, when the Red Sox were not as active as some people thought they would be, they haven't won a game. The Rays haven't lost a game. The Yankees haven't lost a game. And the Blue Jays haven't lost a game. And the Red Sox have lost all of their games. So this has been an interesting turnaround and an interesting American League East since the trade deadline began or ended. And it'll be real interesting to see where the Red Sox go from here and whether the Yankees and the Blue Jays can catch them. It's really interesting now.
So over the weekend, I had conversations with executives with other teams that were interested in possibly trading for Kyle Schwarber before he went to the Red Sox. You know, the context for those conversations were the Red Sox failure to make a deal for Anthony Rizzo. What I heard from other teams is they're concerned that Schwarber's hamstring injury is going to keep him out longer than what people generally believe. You know, there a couple of the teams I talked to feel that he's not going to be back until late in August. Now, Schwarber spoke with reporters yesterday. He talked about, on Saturday, and he said that he would start his minor league rehabilitation soon. Alex Cora told us yesterday they're going to have that conversation on Tuesday or Wednesday about when it's going to start. But, Tim, either way, it sort of underscores the fact that, you know, the Red Sox are sort of banking on an unsure thing in Kyle Schwarber. And as we talked about on Friday, at the time, as we discussed their first base situation, whatever solution Alex has, Tim, it's going to be imperfect because he's going to have to diminish his defense in what other choice he makes. If he puts Kyle Schwarber at first base, position he's never played before, that's going to diminish the defense. If he puts Schwarber in left field, then that means he's going to have to take out a good outfielder. He puts Schwarber at DH, that means JD Martinez is going to have to play the outfield. I still don't understand, Tim, as we talked about on the show the other day, why they didn't finish a deal for Rizzo.
Yeah, I mean, just look at the difference between the two teams and just personality in the two teams since the trade was made. The Yankees are a different team with Joey Gallo and Anthony Rizzo. You look at them and say, okay, they have a chance to make the playoffs now. And the Red Sox are still going to make the playoffs. I believe that. But Anthony Rizzo would have been a perfect fit in Boston. And again, Buster, they're going into yesterday, their first baseman had 18 walks and 143 strikeouts this year at first base. Their OPS was 653. That's not good enough to win the pennant, to win a division. And that's what they're banking on. And, you know, they played Christian Arroyo at first base a couple games just because they needed a right-handed hitter there. And then they put Franchy Cordero, who played 8 innings at first base in his career, and he played first base this year for the Red Sox. And now they're going to take Kyle Schwarber, who's never played first base, and put him there with a bad hamstring. So I'm not sure this was as well thought out as it could have been. And, again, these are the Red Sox, and I'm just not sure where they're going to go from here, but I still have faith Alex Cora will figure it out. But he is a defensive-oriented manager, and they're not going to be the same defensive team.
I will tell you, I'm curious to see if you agree with me on this. If the Red Sox, from this point forward, fail to make the playoffs, knowing how the market of Boston is, 100% of the blame is going to go on the Red Sox front office versus Alex Cora. That's what I believe, in Boston. Because Alex Cora has built up some equity there, and the front office under Heim Bloom hasn't yet. And given how well they played in the first 3.5 months of this year, how they overachieved, I think a lot of the folks in the city of Boston, I know around baseball, believe a lot of that is due to Alex Cora. And if they get overcome by these teams that loaded up at the trade deadline, they're going to get blamed.
I totally agree. Toronto improved itself at the trade deadline significantly. So did the Yankees. And, you know, and the Rays got Nelson Cruz, who's a big upgrade on what they had. And the Red Sox did not upgrade enough. Not that Kyle Schwarber is not going to help. He hit 18 homers in a 35-game stretch this year. But again, they still have not completely addressed their biggest issue offensively, and that's first base. And here we are. They've lost 4 in a row for the first time all year.
All right. I wanted to talk to you about the ex-Cubs. You know, we sort of touched on this a little bit. Anthony Rizzo playing so well for the Yankees. Chris Bryant hits a home run in his first game for the Giants. Javier Baez hits a home run in his first game for the Mets. I wrote a piece about this for ESPN.com. I'm not sure when it's going to go up, Tim. But part of my line on it was that as you really begin to think about what had gone on with the Cubs, it felt like to me like these players had become like 6-year college college students. And by the way, for full disclosure sake, it took me 6 years to go through Vanderbilt. Okay. So it really had that feel of, you know, it's time for these guys to move on. And so it's not surprising to me that to watch Anthony Rizzo, oh my God, he's having fun. Chris Bryant having fun. Javier Baez always has fun. I think they're going to, in the end, this is going to be a good thing for all the players.
Absolutely. And as you saw this morning, Buster, they're the first team ever to have three players, a trio of players who started the year with one team were traded midseason and then hit a home run in their debut game with the new team. They're the first trio since 1900 to ever do that. And Rizzo didn't just hit a home run the first game, he had a homer the second game. And then yesterday, all off left-handed pitching, had a big at-bat against Richard Blyer. Of course, Chris Bryant homered in his debut, Javi Baez in his debut. And I agree, these three guys have been set free, and I'm sure Cub fans are, they, some of them understand this had to be done, but I'm sure they're looking back 2 days later and saying, what did we do? We just traded these core guys, but they weren't winning in Chicago. I get it, but man, are they going to have a good time in their new spots? You could see the smiles on their faces, all three of them already.
Sunday was not a great day for Major League Baseball or the Players Association or Mets owner Steve Cohen because of the Kamar Rocker situation. Tim, as we talked about, as you mentioned in the open, Kamar Rocker, in the end, after a physical exam was done by the Mets, his deal evaporates. And I got to say, Tim, I just hate the way this played out. And I don't know what in the medical information that the Mets gathered on Rocker. And look, if it's serious, you could understand why the Mets would have second thoughts about giving him the $6 million deal that they agreed to. But the system is something I hate, because what happens now is that the Mets say, well, you know what? We're not going to make an offer because we don't like your physical condition. Oh, but no other team can sign you. You have no rights whatsoever. You can either go back to college, you can play independent baseball, and the Mets get compensated for not signing Rocker this year by getting a comp pick at number 11 last year. Seems like an absolute joke to me that's so stacked against the players. What'd you make of all that?
Yeah, that was discouraging. And just another reminder that we need to examine the whole draft system when something like this happens. All right, maybe Kamar Rocker is really hurt. Maybe he does indeed have a shoulder and an elbow injury. I'm not sure. I've heard both sides of this. But that kid really didn't do anything wrong, and now he's going to be punished because the Mets could not agree on a number here, and he should not have to go to an independent league in order to continue his career. And if he goes overseas and plays in Japan, he can't just automatically come right back and enter the draft. It's a very tricky spot that he is being put in. And we brought this up on Baseball Tonight yesterday, Jeff Passan did, but we've talked about this for years. Why are you not allowed to trade a draft choice? Why can you not say, hey, we can't sign this guy? A bunch of other teams might have said, well, we'll take him. We'll give you a prospect for him, but we'll take him as a drafted player and we'll sign him. It just doesn't seem right that Kamar Rocker doesn't have a job because the Mets did not like what they saw on the physical. That kid deserves better than that, and the system needs to change.
Yep, no doubt about it. You know, the suggestion I said on Twitter this morning, if, you know, there was no trade of draft picks, and I agree with Jeff, I think that would be one potential, alternative to what's going on. Possible adjustment might be that MLB and the Player Association make a rule that if a team declines to make a minimum offer, and let's say 80% of prescribed slot value, so a team like the Mets in this situation, concerned about his shoulder, if they offered, if they declined to offer $4.8 million, then the team should become a free agent, able to sign with any team. Because I absolutely believe this, Tim. And again, I don't know what's in his shoulder, but I know the kid. I've met him a couple times. You know that he has potential. We saw that during his time at Vanderbilt. If you put that, that pitcher up for bidding, he would get a lot of money. There would be some teams that say, you know what, we've seen this situation before, and we'll work it out. So that to me would be one potential solution. I also thought Mets owner Steve Cohen, his tweet that he sent out yesterday to try to explain to Mets fans about what happened was really kind of gross on a lot of different levels. The tweet was, education time. Baseball draft picks are worth up to 5 times their slot value to clubs. I never shy away from investments that can make me that type of return. Now, I'm counting the words here, Tim. The 10, 15, 20, about 30 words in that tweet. There were so many offensive things in those 30 words. First off, he's acknowledging that the draft system suppresses the actual market value of draftees. That's kind of gross. And he's implying that the risk with Rocker, he's essentially demeaning Rocker out and his physical condition out in a public forum after turning down the opportunity to make a deal with him, because he's suggesting that whatever physical state the Rocker has outweighs his possible value. And I don't think it's fair. And meanwhile, as you mentioned, Rocker has zero recourse.
Yeah, that's not right. And it was a little condescending of Steve Cohen the way he presented all this, like, hey, I'm an investor. This is my business here. Well, this is also a baseball story. And as well as he's done as the owner so far, and I'm impressed with what he's done overall as the owner, he doesn't know baseball. He may know investing, but this just isn't fair to the player, period. And like I said, when we collective bargaining, the next collective bargaining agreement, we're going to have to get together on this question, because this the players have to stand up and say, what are we doing here? And both sides have to find a more equitable agreement to how you handle a situation like this.
Now, we know that the rights to players, that's technically an asset for these owners. Don't talk about them like they're an asset, like they're property. I just don't think that's not something he should be doing. So Steve Cohen can certainly do better. All right, Tim. Thank you for taking the baton from here.
Well, my pleasure, Buster. I hope you get on your plane. I hope you didn't bother too many people in the terminal there. It's hilarious, your life. I'm sorry. I live a similar life, but I don't spend every Monday at an airport.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Okay, on Sunday Night Baseball, Buster went rapid fire with the newest of the Rays, Nelson Cruz, who's a really good player and a very playful guy. Here's Buster's full interview with him.
What's it like to be traded to a contender in the middle of the season?
Well, awesome. It seems like you wake up and it's a fresh new day. Definitely, as a player, you want to be in the race. You want to be in the contender, especially at my age. I want to be in the team that I believe that can win the World Series, and this is the thing, you know. So hopefully we can accomplish that.
What are your first impressions of the Rays and their personalities?
Very loose. Everybody's loose. Everybody is just having fun. So many personalities. Like, the whole thing, everybody is just seeking point. Every player is different. The way they act, the way they go about business. But at the end of the day, it's about win, and they all prepare to go out there and do the best.
Tell me about Kevin Cash's sense of humor.
Pretty funny. I mean, he always come up with different quotes. But he definitely, like I said, he wants to make sure you lose. You're comfortable. That was the first thing that he asked me, you know, what did I need? And he keep asking me, like, you okay? How's the house? Oh, you need any help from us? So he wants to make sure every single player feel comfortable in the situation that he's going to go out and perform, and also comfortable outside the field. So he's just a great, great manager.
You came so close to winning a World Series in 2011. What would that mean for you? What would it mean to you at this stage in your career?
It'd be everything, man. I wake up every day with that goal, you know. I put the uniform every day and go out there to compete so I can accomplish that goal. That's the main goal at this point in my career. And that would be the word for me.
When you worked on your grandfather's farm, what was the chore you hated the most?
In the afternoon, I had to go separate the cows from the babies. And sometimes, I mean, I was working at the shack too. Most of the times I stop by the river, get some quick shower, so I can get some, I guess, freshen up my body. And sometimes I just forget about that I had to go and do that job. And I remember my grandpa go there and he let me know that I cannot forget that. It was part of my job. So I was a kid, so I just want to enjoy the moment. And but that was the part that I don't like.
What was hard about separating the moms from their babies?
Because sometimes you have to run around for like 30 minutes just chasing the cow, little cows, you know. And I mean, it was wet, you know, the cows, that what they throw out. So I had to chase the little cows, and that was a mess too.
When you did work in your uncle's repair shop, what did you learn the most from that time?
Well, responsibility. I was a kid, and I had to go to school. After school, go to my uncle's shop, and then go to do the job with the cows. So I had learned at a young age about responsibility, hard work. I mean, and it teach me a lot, and I think create who I am right now.
When you were young, you were on the Dominican national basketball team. Give me a scouting report on your basketball game.
I wasn't that good. It was just kid skin. I just want to play around. It was the only sport that I can play at night because I was working all day. We had lights in my community, and I can go and play at night. So I guess I have that love for the game of basketball. But I also love baseball. But I don't have the chance to go and play at daytime like other kids because I was busy working.
You hit a home run in the playoffs off Justin Verlander, a pitch 100 miles per hour. Take us through that moment.
I mean, he struck me out the about before a breaking ball, so I was surprised that he threw me a fastball in that situation. And I don't know how I hit the pitch. It was 100, so I guess it was a lucky shot.
You've won humanitarian awards. What does that mean to you?
Well, I think you cannot work any award more important than that, because the work you put on the field and all the things that you've done and, to create the type of player you are, you know, you work to get through that. You help other people without thinking that you're going to get rewarded, you know. But it's always nice to see the other people are paying attention to what you're doing, and it pushes you to keep helping more. And so far, I just want to play also to keep helping on those people that need help.
Nelson, you take a nap before every game. How did that start, and how does it help you?
That started in Texas. Even in the minors, sometimes I take a few naps once in a while. And in Texas, we got resources about it, like how does that help, especially sports that require quicknesses, like especially baseball, you know. So that's the ones that require eyes and hands coordination, and that's quick. So the naps help you to increase the quicknesses and reflections of the eyes. Also, when you take the nap, you wake up more fresh with more energy. So it's not only about what I think, how it feels. Resources tell they help. So since 2009. I've been taking naps more regularly lately, I think because of my age. I've been finding it pretty helpful.
How much guff do you take? How much crap do you take from your teammates because of your age?
Every day, even from the other side, even the umpires. So that everybody on the field just keep, even the fans scream how much long I'm going to play. They play around my gray hair. Tell me, what do you expect? I'm 41, so I should have gray hair. But it's fun, you know. It's a kid game. You have to enjoy the moment. I like to compete. I want to be out there with the best players that we can find, especially in my team. And I enjoy every second when I'm out there.
Last one for you. Tell me about the selfie that you took with Joe West. How did that come about, and why did you do that?
Well, in 2013, we played in New York, and my plan was to take a photo with the first baseman. My first at bat, I think I ground out, so I don't get on base. In my second at bat, I forgot to put the phone in my pocket, so I walk and I don't have my phone. So that year, I was like, okay, I don't want to gamble and maybe I don't get on base, so I gotta take a picture with Joe West. You know, nothing, no better guy to take a picture with than Joe West. So that's how it came about. Everybody was questioning that I don't gonna do it. That's gonna be impossible. It's like, oh, you see, I will do it right away. And it worked out perfect, you know. Joe is an ambassador of the game. He means so much to the game. I have so much respect for him. And it come up a great issue, you know, even until today.
That's awesome. Nelson, thanks for doing this.
You got it.
So here's Wander Franco, the wonderful shortstop for the Tampa Bay Rays, and he sat down with R. Marley Rivera, who was working for ESPN Radio this weekend.
I get to chat with a Rays superstar, Wander Franco. Wander, estábamos hablando ahora mismo, we were just talking about the fact that things are different after the All-Star break. What has clicked for you? ¿Qué fue lo que me estabas diciendo que ha sucedido después del Juego de Estrellas?
Que adaptándome y trabajando fuerte y enfocado, ¿sabes? Y yo sabía que este momento iba a llegar, de que yo hiciera trabajo, porque yo sé que el pelotero que soy, ¿me entiendes? Pero poco a poco adaptándose.
I knew the ball player that I could be, is what Wander is telling me, saying I just needed to do the hard work, but of course I needed to adapt. ¿Qué es lo más difícil? What's the hardest part que te tienes que adaptar en Grandes Ligas?
Que el picheo, obviamente, sí, el picheo, okay. como se juega, ¿no? Porque como ya se juega, ya yo me fui adaptando y ya, ¿entiendes? Pero un poquito a los picheos, sí.
Sí, it's got to be the pitching. It's just you have to really take in Major League pitching. Wander, ¿quién es la persona? Obviamente Nelson acaba de llegar, así que no vamos a referirnos específicamente. We're not going to talk about Nelson Cruz specifically. We're going to talk about him later. ¿Quién ha sido la persona, who's the person that has helped you the most? La persona que más te ha ayudado, ¿verdad?, en estos días mientras has estado en el clubhouse. ¿Cómo te han ido ayudando tus compañeros?
Bueno, me han ayudado varios muchachos también, sí, como Margot. Margot ya tiene varios años aquí en Grande Liga y me ha dado mucho consejo. Y bueno,
¿Cómo que?
Que sabe que hay diferente, que lo primero que uno tiene que tener es la mente fuerte y seguir enfocado y luchando por, ¿entiendes?, por un sueño.
Wander is saying that Manuel Margot has given him a lot of advice, and the best piece of advice that he gave him is this is very much a mental game, and if you are strong mentally, then you really are going to succeed. Wander, ustedes están en tremenda posición por primera vez en al tope. You guys are top of the division for the first time since June 26, alone at top of the division. ¿Tú estás viendo ya que este camino a playoffs está hecho? Do you see this path to the playoffs right there?
Sí, sí.
Sí.
Claro.
Yes.
Claro, uno está trabajando para hacer el esfuerzo y para lograr y para ayudar bastante al equipo, y eso está ahí.
That's absolutely there. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm here to help my team. Wander, ¿tú esperabas estar aquí ya tan rápido? Did you expect to be here right now?
Bueno, sí, claro, porque
yes, of course.
Claro, pues tú sabes que uno se prepara para una meta del año, ¿me entiendes? Y yo me preparé, me mandaron para AAA, bueno, dos meses en AAA lo máximo y después para Grande Liga, así mismo fue.
I told myself I'm going to work really, really hard in AAA. I'm going to spend a maximum of 2 months in AAA, and then I'm going to the majors, and that's exactly what I'm doing. This is the moment that I prepare for, and that's why I'm here. Háblame de tu rutina. Talk to me a little bit about your routine. ¿Tienes una superstición, algo que tú haces todo el tiempo? Tell me about, like, do you have any routine, superstitions when you go to the plate, cuando vas al plato? ¿Hay algo que tú siempre haces?
Oh, la rutina.
Cuéntame.
¿Cómo te digo? No, una rutina aquí, comer fruta cuando llego.
No.
Y, no, bueno, cuando voy al plato, ¿sabes? Primero me presino y eso, por cosas de Dios, y enfocado cuando voy al plato, ¿sabes? A romperle cabeza al piche. Así es.
Saying, I always get there and I cross myself, and after crossing myself, the next thing I do is focus on that pitch, and I'm just focused. He's saying, I'm just focused on hitting that ball just dead to the pitcher's head. No es para darle la cabeza al pitcher, es una manera de decir.
Exacto.
It's like, it's just an expression. He's like, I really don't want to hit the pitcher's head. It's just an expression of how you attack the ball. Wander, en este momento, there's a lot of Right now, there's a lot of Latin stars, really young Latin stars. We're talking about Vladdy, Fernando Tatis Jr., Ronald Acuña Jr., who we hope comes back soon. Of course, Shohei Ohtani, and you're part of that group. ¿Qué se siente que yo diga el nombre tuyo con el nombre de esas estrellas?
No, se siente súper bien, porque en verdad son muchachos que ya han logrado muchos sueños, ¿me entiendes? Por ello, entonces yo quisiera... Bueno, seguir los pasos de ellos y hacer trabajo como ellos han ayudado a su equipo.
I want to do exactly what they've done. They've helped their team. They really have. They've just been around for a little while, but they're already making that mark with their team, and I want to be a part of that. Por último, Wander, last thing. Háblame de Nelson Cruz. Tell me what it is to have Nelson Cruz in this team y lo que significa para ti.
Uf. Eso significa una gran oportunidad para el equipo, un gran apoyo para el equipo. ¿Sabe? Que el hombre está haciendo su trabajo, ¿me entiendes? El hombre... Él va a hacer su trabajo donde quiera que llegue, pero en verdad lo necesitaba, ¿no?
He's a guy that we needed. He's a guy that when he comes into the clubhouse, he just does his job, and he's a professional and does his job so well, and I want to follow in his footsteps. Wander, there's a joke out there that you guys have the age difference in baseball. The biggest one is 21-year difference. What is that like to play with a guy that is like your dad? Ayuna, estamos bromeando porque ustedes tienen la diferencia de edad más grande en el béisbol de 20 años. ¿Cómo se siente eso, estar con alguien que podría ser tu papá? Pero no le decimos eso.
No, nosotros estábamos hablando. Cuéntame. Nosotros estábamos hablando de eso ahí. Uh-huh. Él me dice que cuando él debutó en Grandes Ligas, yo tenía apenas 4 años, que él podría ser mi papá, no debe estar mi abuelo. ¿Sabe? Y eso se siente súper orgulloso de tener una persona como él aquí.
I just feel really proud that Nelson is here. We were just joking about that. He said, when I debuted in the majors, you were only 4 years old, but actually he can not only be my dad, he can be my grandpa. Yo creo que eso a Nelson le va a gustar. I don't think he's going to like that one. Gracias, Wander.
And here's our Sean Kelly, who sat down with Alex Cora, the Red Sox manager, this weekend.
Alex, I'm looking at the landscape post-trade deadline, and there's a few big names wearing different uniforms, especially in your division this weekend. Evaluate, if you don't mind, how you think that the landscape in the AL East has changed and how it impacts you and the Red Sox.
I don't think it impacts us. You know, I think we're still going to do the same thing, show up every day and work hard for what we want. We've been saying this all along from day one. We have a good baseball team that is not perfect, but at the same time, we believe we can play with anybody in this division, outside the division. It's just a matter of keep sticking to our principles, put good at-bats, pitch well, play good defense, and turn the page. I think that's the most important thing. Don't get caught up on all the hype or all the talk, whatever. I always said that in this city, it gets loud, you know? It gets loud outside our walls, and my job as a manager is to keep the noise outside the clubhouse and stay the course. And so far, we've been doing a good job.
You'll try and even the series with the Rays tonight. You got two things really working in your favor. Let's start with who's on the mound, and that's Nathan Eovaldi. What a great arm to have for you tonight in this situation.
He's a good one. And we got him in 18, and everybody knows the story, right? And he's getting better. He's healthy. He's made some adjustments, nutrition-wise, workout-wise, and he's been able to pose every 5 days, which is very important. You know the stuff, you know, good fastball, good breaking ball split, throwing a lot of strikes. And this is a team that is very aggressive. We've been facing them since spring training. We play them a lot in spring training, and now during the season, obviously, we're going to play them a lot. It's a good baseball team. They're the defending American League champions, you know, so we know that they're good, but glad that we have Nate, and hopefully he can go deep into the game.
That second thing working for you tonight, too, is Rafael Devers. And Alex, he's so much fun to watch. I think every time I've seen him at the plate this year, his lips are moving the whole time. Can you share with me whatever that conversation is that he's having with his bat himself or whatever it is
whoever,
that seems to be working in his way?
I mean, it started early in the season, but the last few weeks, I think people have noticed. And it's actually a conversation. I never asked him what he said. Sometimes it's in English, sometimes it's in Spanish, sometimes it's Spanglish too. So I just leave it at that. He's been amazing for us. One thing that people don't realize or forget about that he's only 24. And we talk about Tatis, we talk about Vladdy, we talk about Soto, all those young players. And because Rafi got to the big leagues in 17, because he has a World Series ring and he led the big leagues in extra base hits in 19. They think he's 27. No, no, no. He's 24 and he's still learning how to play the game.
He says that his looking more like he did two seasons ago is because you're back in the dugout. What's your reaction to that?
Well, hopefully when he signs that big contract, whatever, he gives me 5% of it, if he feels that way. I'm happy that he says that. You know, there's a kid that I really appreciate, not only on the field, but off the field. He's been amazing. He's one of those that, you know, he's such a good person, which is the most important thing. We connected right away, traveling to Dominican. He will travel to Puerto Rico. We'll make sure we stay in touch in the off season. You know, there's somebody that is very important, not only for our present, but also for the future. And he's become a superstar. And I'm glad that he says that. I feel the same way about him.
Bleacher Tweets. Alrighty, Timmy, Bleacher Tweets for a Monday. We have a loaded slate of tweets here. Let's go to Andrew DeSalvo at DeSalvotion. Andrew writes in, what is Kumar Rocker likely to do now that the Mets didn't sign him? Can the Mets trade his rights and someone else can sign him? If no, why wouldn't that be allowed? Seems to punish the player if a frugal, overly cautious team drafts him. A lot of people want answers about this Kumar Rocker situation. What do you think, Buster? What do you think, Tim? Excuse me. Wow.
This is a very thorny situation, and it's not an equitable situation. Kumar Rocker is being punished here, and he can't. No, you cannot trade his rights. He has to re-enter the draft next year, which certainly could happen, but he's going to have to probably go play independent ball somewhere, and that just doesn't seem right. For him to be able to re-enter the draft, he should. If they can't sign him, they should be allowed to trade his rights to someone who does want to sign him. And it's simply not fair to the player. Buster and I talked about this quite a bit this morning.
Next up, we have John Buell at JBuell19. John writes in, if Nick Madrigal is healthy and playing as well as he was before the injury, is Craig Kimbrell still on the White Sox?
That's a really good question. Nick Madrigal is a good little player. And as we know, he puts the ball in play. He puts the bat on the ball. Last year, he had 35 hits, 32 singles. He's a guy who really tries to get a hit, not hit a home run. He went, I believe it was 176 pitches this year without a swing and miss. That's who he is. And yes, if he hadn't gotten hurt, he would still be the everyday second baseman for the White Sox, and Craig Kimbrell likely would not be on the White Sox. But they're going to start next year, the Cubs, with Madrigal at second, Nico Horner at shortstop, and you could do a whole lot worse than those two guys who have tremendous baseball IQs in the middle infield, and both of them are intent on putting the ball in play. So when the Cubs start over next year, it's going to be an interesting look in the middle infield, and I kind of like it with those two guys.
Next up, we have my guy Don Irvine at Don Irvine. Don writes in, after gutting the Nationals, how much time does Mike Rizzo have to put a playoff contending team on the field before the owners and fans lose their patience?
That's a good question. You know, Mike Rizzo has always been relentless in putting a team together and going and getting what he needs. And he proved even more relentless in getting rid of players. But I'm going to give him and the organization the benefit of the doubt. Free agency ahead and all these big contracts they've already signed. It's going to take a while to figure out what the Nationals are going to do next. But Josiah Gray, who's starting on Monday night, people will tell you he might be the best prospect to move during that crazy trade deadline. So they got a chance to move pretty quickly here. And there's always a chance Mike Rizzo, the Riverboat Gambler, is going to re-sign some of these players who he just traded away. Max Scherzer, in theory, could come back and pitch for the Nationals next year. But always remember, Mike Rizzo is also a player developmental guy. His dad, late dad, was a scout. And Mike Rizzo knows how to build a team from the ground up. Believe me, it's just as the GM, he's gone to try to win the World Series. Now he's going to have to do it another way. And I think he's more than equipped to do that.
Next up, we have David at Baseball Fan 1918. David wants an update on the 2021 free agent shortstop class. He kind of runs through them all here. He's got Lindor. Obviously, he signed with the Mets. Story almost traded the deadline. Baez traded to the Mets. Correa refused to sign the Astros contract offer. And Seager with the Dodgers trading for Trey Turner. Kind of a murky situation there. Where do they all stand looking ahead to next year? Any of those pop out at you?
Well, that whole scenario has changed so enormously with the Corey Seager injury, with the Lindor signing, with Javi Baez, at least at the moment. Well, he's playing shortstop at the moment, but he's going to probably finish the year as a second baseman. Trey Turner, though not a free agency, is also playing second base. I mean, it is a really weird look. And we just figured there'd be five great shortstops coming out to free agency, and that's just not the case. And Trevor Story, we're still astonished how he is still on the Rockies at this point. And let's not forget that Marcus Semien could enter this group also. He's a second baseman this year for the Blue Jays. But he's got, you know, 24 homers and has had a great year. So, you know, we just figured this would be this perfect scenario of all these shortstops coming out at the same time. And it just hasn't been exactly the way we thought it was going to be. But all those guys are going to make some money. Maybe not as much as we thought they were going to make.
Mark Wooster writes in at Mark Wooster says, why do teams wait just before the trade deadline to make deals? Yankees needed left-handed bats all year. Texas had to know for 2 months they were trading Gallo. Yankees would be in such a better position had they required him a month ago. Same with Rizzo.
Well, it's an excellent point. We understand, but like any other deadline, players and teams are going to wait till the end on these things. And just look at Rizzo, for instance. The Cubs were not going to unload all these players a month ago. And then they lost 11 games in a row and everything changed. So you can't say, why didn't the Yankees get Rizzo 2 months ago? Well, the Cubs were planning on winning the division 2 months ago. So you have to go right to the deadline. I've seen this, Taylor, a million times. I've had general managers tell me, if we win tonight's game, we're going to be buyers. If we lose tonight's game, we're going to be sellers. That's how close it comes to the deadline and how quickly things can change.
Last one for today. Todd Alec Pratt writes in at Todd Pratt 7. Tim, what are the chances that the Cubs sign Rizzo, Bryant, or Javi this winter? I've been on a Bleacher Tweets hiatus, but I come to you searching for hope. My buddy Zach, he was texting me all weekend. He's like, I need Buster's take on which of these guys are going to be re-signed. And what do you think? They can't re-sign more than one, right?
No, I don't see how. And again, it's all going to depend, of course, how these players do in their new spots. I mean, let's say Javi Baez and the Mets take off and Baez and Lindor just love playing next to each other. I can't see Javi Baez going back to the Cubs as much as he loved it there and the success he had there. What if the Yankees completely take off? Anthony Rizzo has an amazing 2 months. They make the playoffs and they offer him a contract. Why would he want to leave the Yankees if he just took them to the playoffs? And Chris Bryant just told us yesterday that he grew up loving the San Francisco Giants and Barry Bonds was his favorite player. What if the Giants win the division and they do something in October and Chris Bryant's right in the middle of it? Why would he go back to Chicago? Look, the Cubs are a great franchise. All three of those guys would be, I'm sure, happy to go back. But the logical thing is, I don't think any of the three is guaranteed to go back. I would say Rizzo's the best opportunity, but let's see what happens the next 2 months and then we'll make a determination.
Alrighty, that is it for a loaded slate of Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. When you're watching the games, please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. Thank you to my guy, Mr. Malibu, on Friday for handling the producing work. And thank you to Mr. Kirkshin for stepping in for Buster here on a Monday. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks, everyone, for joining in. I'm Tim Kirkshin, pinch hitting again for Buster Olney. I hope Buster got home safely. Carl Ravitch, Eduardo Perez, and I are doing the Phillies-Nationals game tonight on ESPN at 7 o'clock. Have a great day, and as always, enjoy the baseball.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.